Welcome to NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with your host, Dee Klein.
Today on NFP, Dr. Nobi from the 1111 NFT Gallery and TML, the founder of UPX World, join me for a discussion about the metaverse-based NFT gallery that seeks to provide a passive income source for artists and owners. Existing in the UPX World's digital space and connected to the broader metaverse platform Upland, the gallery provides a competitive mechanism for artists to sell and share their work, which can then be converted into in-game assets for gamers to enjoy.
Hey, this is NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with me, Dee Klein. Today's episode is brought to you by the Koi Network. Koi makes minting NFTs super easy and inexpensive. Just drag and drop your file using their NFT wallet, Finny, and Koi takes care of the rest. Minting costs as little as 1 cent, so you can create as many NFTs as you want. And when they're viewed by other people, you even earn Koi tokens that you can use to fund your next series. Check it out at koii.network.
Right on. Hey, I have a couple of very interesting guests here today. I have the founder of UPX World, TML, I guess you go by, thank me later, as well as Dr. Nobi, who is working with the 1111, would you call it a platform that is built within this UPX World space? How would you explain that to me, Dr. Nobi? Talk to me about this relationship here between the two of you.
Yeah, so, we met through the Upland community. Upland, mm-hmm. if you don't know, is a NFT-based, I mean, the most succinct way that I explain it to people is like GPS Monopoly, basically. You're buying all these virtual properties that are mapped to the real world, and they earn you passive in-game income, which you can use to buy more and so on and so on. It's a lot to explain, but I got into it. I started looking up podcasts for it. And Thank Me Later is a co-host of the, I guess you would call it the Genesis podcast of Upland, where okay. they do a weekly podcast talking about all of the news and information, strategy and stuff like that. Occasionally have guests from the community. And so I was attending those podcasts to kind of, you know, get all that information. And at one point, TML's co-host put out the notice that they were looking for a podcast editor. And at the time, I was starting a podcast production company. So I reached out, and that's how we got to know each other. And so now with UPX World and 1111, UPX World is totally his thing, which I will let him explain in more detail. 1111 is my thing, which the way it kind of works is like, the best analogy I think is like the way he would put it is a store in a mall. So okay. his thing is the mall, my thing is the store. And so UPX World kind of hosts all these different or is made to host you know, potentially limitless a number of these experiences, one of which is 1111. And 1111 is an art gallery, an NFT art gallery, which also is a structured competition between the art itself, more than really the artists, and also serves as an entry point for art on in-game items within UPX World.
Right, because of course with UPX World and then extending into Upland, you do have this kind of integration of NFTs into that larger metaverse, I guess.
Right. And Upland is an EOS game, EOS, whichever you prefer, game. We host all the 1111 NFTs on Wax. And so they have that kind of synchronicity already. And there's way back, they did an under the radar launch of like an NFT portal into Upland. Mm-hmm. But I think there's only one collection that you can do it with right now, but the potential is there for 1111 and other NFTs to be able to be ported into Upland as well.
Okay, interesting. Maybe we can get TML here to come talk to us about what UPX World is a little bit more. Thanks, Dr.
Yeah, Nobi. Of course.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Dr. Nobi definitely hit some of the big pieces. So UpX World is really a Web3 gaming platform and development studio that I'm building. And the idea is UpX World itself doesn't sell any NFTs. Our entire purpose in life is to work with projects like 1111 and go, okay, and Upland, and go, you guys have these great NFT platforms, but you need utility, you need gamification, you need value structure. And to me, that's where these layer two games, because like, we're not built on the blockchain. We integrate in down to Wax, EOS, we'll have Ethereum, Dapper, Flow, et cetera. Like, we'll integrate in with all those wallets to be able to see what assets people own. And then we add gamification and utility. So for instance, for all of the art in 1111, like Dr. Nobi mentioned, we're going to have in-game item creation. So let's say you wanted to make a t-shirt in-game with one of the pieces of art that were sold at the pyramid, then you could do that. There would be a small fee to do that, and you would get the in-game item. The critical difference in in-game items in UpX World versus, I think, where a lot of the Web3 space is trying to go, is we don't believe that everything should be an NFT. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that's happening in the space right now. And so when I look at projects like 1111, which are focused on scarcity, like the pyramid pieces are all one of ones. The array pieces, which he'll talk about, which sell unlimited through the month, they have a burn mechanic built in. So there's automatically like ways that there is value built in. And then with UpX World, being able to create items and then have that revenue from the in-game purchases distributed down to the actual artist and art owners is, to me, the evolution of decentralized money, decentralized assets, and now we're bringing decentralized revenue streams. So that's really what UpX World aims to be, is think of Roblox or Minecraft, but now instead of all of that revenue going to just a single corporate entity, we are truly, every in-app purchase is backed by one or more NFTs. And then that, all of that revenue gets shared among the community and the artists. So it's a completely different model that then adds passive revenue back down to these NFTs. And for these artists, like, this is a great way to start, you know, really stacking up multiple sources of income and revenue potentially.
Oh, right on. So maybe Dr. Nobi, you can explain this to me a little bit. Say as an artist, a lot of people who listen to the show are artists. I'm an artist myself. I create a piece. Talk to me about the process. Like, what does it mean for an artist to be involved in this 1111 project? And, you know, where does that carry over to? Are you going to be seeing people in the game with, you know, these works of art up in their virtual property somewhere? Or, you know, I know you talk about a gallery that 1111 exhibits. Talk to me about that process.
Yeah. So as far as, you know, having people with their player characters displaying this art on their characters and in their homes, on their items and whatever. Absolutely. That's the main aesthetic functional goal of this whole thing. Is that, you know, this art gets sold and then it gets put on stuff in the game. Like TML mentioned, you can put it on a t-shirt. Once that's available, you could, and that's another cool thing about it, is that depending on the piece of art, you know, if you have something that is essentially like logo style, you know, then that might look cool right in the middle of a t-shirt or on a hat, you know, something like that. If you have something like, we have artists in the pyramid, which I'll explain later, which is part of the gallery, who do like paint pours. And so it's kind of this amorphous abstract thing. And that might look really cool wrapped around a helmet, you know, or on a car or something. So there's, as it evolves, you know, we're going to see a lot more functionality in terms of just kind of how it develops and what items there are and what people like to put on what kind of things. And then what kind of artists we attract that are interested in making those things. So yeah, there's like unlimited potential in terms of what you can make and how it can be used. And yeah, does that answer your question?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, okay. You've mentioned a couple of terms that, you know, I was reading a little bit about UpX World, but I'm sure listeners might not understand. You talked about the array, which yes. I think has to do with your personal profile. And then you talk about the pyramid. And I know there's like a guild that, you know, is it like a collection of the top artists who are basically competing with each other to get climb higher up in these rankings. Like maybe you can talk about that structure a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. So the guild is the... it's kind of outside of the main structure. It's like a bonus area basically. So okay. I'll get to that. The array sure. is kind of the starting grounds where you, initially when I conceptualized it, I had this idea that artists would submit all of their pieces at once. And then they would just be revealed over the course of a year. But in the interest of lowering the bar of entry and also providing artists an opportunity to adapt and grow with the process, we're doing, you have to submit two to begin with, your array piece and your first pyramid piece. And then it's one by one. So the array is where you have your first piece in. That's the first piece that'll be seen in 1111 by you as an artist.
And these should be completely unique pieces, correct? They should not yes. be pieces that have been minted elsewhere. They should not be pieces that you've shared on Instagram, etc., correct?
Well, with the pyramid, those are the ones that are really the ones that are like, these can't be seen anywhere else.
I see. Okay.
In the array, it can be something you've posted elsewhere. It just can't be something you've minted or sold.
I see.
But yes, totally unique, your own work, you know. I part of the growing pains of this process has been denying stock images and, you of know, stuff like that. So, yeah, I want to be very, very clear that this is for artists who are really making their own stuff and want to see it in a video game, you know, and make some money off of it, hopefully. So, yeah, the array is an unlimited drop for one epic, which is from the 11th to the 11th of each month. That's the cycle. Okay. So your array piece can be minted infinitely during that time by anyone. And then those array pieces, as TML mentioned.
So it's like an open edition, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Which is a term that I have just recently become familiar with that's been applied to that concept. Yeah.
Okay.
But yes, it's an open edition drop. Get as many as you want. There are 11 wax each. And then
which works out to about $1 or so, something like that.
Yeah, I think it's
wax is like what, 7 cents? I mean, something like that.
Seven, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I said, buy as many as you want. In the game, once it's released and once you have the capability to create these in-game items, for array pieces, you will have to burn that item to create the in-game piece. Burn the NFT to create the in-game item. So if you want to make, like we were saying, a hat with an array piece, got to burn one. Want to make a shirt? Got to burn one. Want to make a helmet? Got to burn one. So you might want to stock up to have as many as you want to have to make all the stuff you want to make and then potentially sell them, you know, however many you want to sell later.
So when you sell them, are they somehow returned to a token status of some sort? Because they've been burned, of course.
No. So selling, if you sell, so the in-game items themselves, those are
they're not sellable.
They're not sellable. Those are account bound. Those are just for you.
Yes.
The NFTs, obviously if you burn it, you can't sell it.
I see. I understand.
Yeah. So, you know, like a true collector, you want to get as many as you can so that you can play with some and sell some later.
Right.
And keep one in the box on the shelf. So with pyramid pieces, those are all one of ones. And those go up for auction, you know, on NFT Hive, as the array pieces are also on NFT Hive. But the pyramid pieces are one of one. And the way those function in the game is that they will be available essentially on a menu within the game. So you can say, yeah, I want to get that image on this piece. You pay your fee, you make it. And then your fee gets split up between UpX World and 1111. So again, kind of the mall, the store in the mall analogy, like all those stores pay rent, you know, that's kind of what's going on here. And of 1111's take of that revenue, 89% goes to the owner of that NFT. 5% goes to 1111 and 6% goes to the artist on a recurring basis. Okay.
So it's essentially royalty.
Yeah, exactly. For the artist. Exactly. So, and that's another thing I want to mention real quick is that these pieces, you know, when you submit your piece to 1111, it is like submitting your piece to a gallery in real life in the sense that you're essentially handing it over, you know.
Okay.
The difference is we do take ownership of the rights to that piece. Mm-hmm. And that is just so that we can control the system and so that we can legally mint it, you know, and produce it and literally copy it, have the copyright. And so for that reason and for just other technical restraints, if an NFT that is made from the art you submit is sold on the secondary market, that royalty comes to 1111 and doesn't get split to the artists. So we're not able to do that right now. If there's a way that, you know, anybody listening knows that we can wave that wand to make that happen, we'll do it. But otherwise it would just be searching through all the transactions and doing it manually, which is not feasible. So apologies for not getting you the royalties that you, I know you want, everybody, because this has been kind of a sticking point. But
they are still continuing to get that 6% though, if I'm understanding correctly.
Exactly. Yes. And they have the opportunity.
They're just not getting the royalty on the resale on the secondary market, but they still are getting the revenues from the item. Is that
exactly
correct?
Exactly. So that's what we're offering. Not in lieu of the royalty, but you know, that's the incentive to participate. And also when your NFT sells, whether it's, you know, the open edition drop or whether it's the one of one, the artist gets 89% of that initial fee. So 1111's commission for this is 11%, pretty much across the board.
Which is around, I mean, it's less than Foundation, Super Rare. It's,
right.
It's lower than those.
Yeah. So it really is, you know, I'm an artist myself. I don't think I mentioned this in our Twitter correspondence, but I was on a show.
No, but I looked you up. I saw you were in a reality show. You mentioned were a makeup artist, I believe.
Yeah. So
I think the show was called Face Off.
That's
you
right.
Were in,
yeah.
The 10th season, I think you were saying.
Yes. The lost season.
I think you called it the lost season. Oh yeah. There you go.
Yeah. maybe I did mention this. Okay. So.
No, I was looking you up on UpX World. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that is, you know, it's a competition reality, art-based competition reality show or whatever you want to call it. Bunch of artists competing against each other on TV.
Pretty niche. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so, you know, it was kind of equal parts awesome and terrible. but I can't honestly say that it didn't inspire this at all because it's, you know, it's kind of the same concept in the Web3 space, you know, but instead of, you know, giving me your phone and living in my house and, you know, being followed around by cameras, you can just submit your art and then we'll do the rest.
So how long is it before you make a reality show out of, you know, what you're doing here?
as soon as we have the funds.
Could be interesting, you know, the first metaverse reality show.
It could be. Yeah. So
there's potential there.
Yeah. So the competition element of 1111 is that it's called the pyramid because at level one, you have 11 artists in there. So each artist has their own unique piece, 11 unique pieces by 11 different artists. Potentially. I mean, right now it's kind of lopsided because we don't have that many artists applying. But hopefully after this, all these artists who are listening right now, hello artists, please submit your pieces at 1111nft.gallery. You'll have
so can I just interrupt you there just for people to understand, like, before you go on, like,
sure,
where would they be applying to do this exactly?
So you would go to 1111nft.gallery, all spelled out. And then you can see there's a little tab that says how it works, and TML actually put together, and then I, you know, fine-tuned a really good infographic on how this whole system steps works. So you can take a look at it. And then you can go to submit your work, and then you'll read through a whole long page of text about what to do and what not to do. And then at the bottom, there's a little link that says fill out this form. And that's where you can submit your work to get it into 1111.
Right. Now, at this point, when you're applying, you're not connecting wallets and so forth, right? It's more just submitting like your image files and your portfolio information, that kind of stuff, correct?
Yeah, it's a Google form. So it's you're just submitting your images and your social media information and how you want to be credited for your art, whether that's your real name or a pseudonym or whatever. And then, of course, your wax wallet address so that we can give you that wax that you earn.
Right.
And
I love wax. I did a thing with Ken Bozak on wax. That was a couple of years ago where we did a collection on there. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Anyway, you were saying you were talking about the pyramid.
Yeah. Sorry. I know it's a lot. So at the bottom level, 11 unique pieces by 11 different artists, ideally. And then the competition element comes in because at the next level, there are 10 slots. So those 10 slots are for the 10 highest selling artists from the previous level. Okay. And then they each come in with a new piece. So you have the, you know, the top 10 artists from the previous level, all with a new piece. Same deal. After that, the top 9 at the next level, top 8, so on and so on, until you have the first, the top remaining artist at the pinnacle, with their pinnacle piece, as we're calling it.
Okay. And so when you get to that point, what is it that you're achieving? Like, if you reach the pinnacle, like, what's
glory?
What's okay.
you're achieving glory, but you're also, you know, you are achieving kind of the status of having reached the pinnacle, because it's
sure,
you know, it's over the course of a year that you've been taking place in this. Yeah. So the epic, you know, the rounds basically run from the 11th to the 11th of each month. So you start in the array from the 11th to the 11th, then you go into pyramid level 1 from the 11th to the 11th and 2 and so on and so on. And so then by the time if you reach that top slot, then you have bested your competition financially, at least
sure,
every round for the last year, and thus, you know, your art might gain some more value as you gain some more notoriety as an artist, and you have that many more pieces in UpX World gaining you revenue.
Right. Maybe UpX World, you can chime in here about how that then carries on into the future with how that might be used on a broader scale.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think art in general, for me, this is, you know, really how players can start to socialize and connect. And for like, for me, the Web3 space for artists is this idea of like, all these people have this really cool art, but then like, how do you use it? Right. Like, so for me, I like seeing each month, first of all, it's super exciting. Like the community like looks at it, like everyone's like, it's like Christmas Day when we reveal the new pieces, because you start to get invested. So it becomes fun. And keep in mind, each month, like as the pyramid builds, like when it's at its peak, there'll be 11 levels of like, of these collectives, which is the group of artists that's going through. So it'll be like watching 11 seasons like of a TV show all at once. It gets really exciting. So for me, there's that element of like finding these new artists or even known artists. They come in and they'll use like a different pseudonym and maybe try out a different art style that they haven't before because they have a brand. And so they're like, well, let me try something else new here. and it gives them an opportunity to experiment. And then, you know, I don't know. I like to think like I want to know like our first Andy Kaufman that comes in, like who just like completely takes on a persona and like does all this art. But then you get this art value, and then you start building this community of being able to create items. And again, this could be as simple as a poster to put up on your in-game house, or right. It could be as detailed as making a custom race car skin, where you're able to layer this art on it. And then you have this new collaboration between the artist and then the art owner, because the art owner is now incentivized heavily to spread the message of like, hey, I have this really cool piece of art. Look at how it's being used, right? And it's not just the artists out there promoting their work. It's the people who own their art that are now also promoting the work. And then it's also UpX World in general as a platform saying, hey, come look at all this great art. So you have multiple community areas that come together to then generate interest about the art. And now we're giving them a platform through in-app purchases to be able to generate passive revenue. And so this is a big departure from how I think NFTs are currently used in the space, which is either one, you kind of have this collectible, like, social gate of like, oh, I own this, so maybe I have access to a special Discord. And like people try to do some fun things with it, or, and I don't like this at all, like the staking mechanic, where then you arbitrarily stake it to somebody's thing and then they arbitrarily give you some coin that they're printing. Like, and the tokenomics there, I've never seen work successfully. There's always a glitch in the system. It never works.
Someone games it somehow or whatever.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Once you start talking, so I'm a gamer. I came into this space knowing nothing of crypto. Like, I still don't actually own much crypto outside of like the wax I used to buy 1111 pieces. Like, I'm not a crypto trader at all. I'm an NFT and blockchain guru. Like, that's where I came in. And gamer. Like, I've been a gamer all my life. So, yeah, if you release a mechanic, the first thing gamers are going to try to do is break the system. And they're really good at it. We've spent the past several decades doing this to every major gaming company. So if you think that you're going to come out with a game and we're not going to find a way to break it. And the problem is that when you do that in layer one, so when I talk about that, it's like when you do that in Upland or Decentraland or Sandbox, any of these metaverses that everything's blockchain oriented, balancing those, like the economy, as well as like the scale of things, is very difficult. And I don't see gaming working at that level. So now when we take it to kind of that layer two, well, now we have people that are buying these in-app purchases, but they're just in-game items. They're not right. NFTs. So that means the revenue we're generating is true revenue for these artists. This isn't, you know, some fake coin that is getting paid out. This is because somebody bought something, you're receiving revenue from it. And it's not going to dilute your market because we're not just minting NFTs, which again, I think is one of the biggest issues of dilution of the value of these art pieces and of the artist's work is mass printing NFTs. Like, that isn't how you scale this. And it's not how you get good revenue for your artists. So we're kind of taking the model. And again, we're building this entire platform to elevate projects like 1111 and give them a space to have their artists earn passive revenue in a new scalable way.
Very interesting. Now, when you are getting paid, that revenue is in the form of the wax token, or is that how artists are receiving funds?
So great question. So any of the sales from the primary, that the array and the pyramid that Dr. Nobi's been mentioning, that is 100% paid out in wax, correct? Mm-hmm. And that's all handled by 1111. And then so when we do, the goal will be that it's paid out in USD from UpX World.
So that's out to PayPal or something.
Ideally to PayPal. Now we are working with, and we've mentioned it a couple of times, like Upland, which is a metaverse game. And they have, which is where the name comes from, their in-game currency is called UPEX.
Right.
And you can buy it. It's kind of a, it's not really a cryptocurrency. It is tracked on the chain, but it's not openly traded. And it's a static 1,000
UPEX. It's like strictly in-game, basically. My impression is you would buy properties in the game with UPEX and then perhaps sell them for USD. And that was kind of your way of
you can
revenues
buy
in real world currency.
Yeah. And they have like block explorers and cars and they're and decorations, all kinds of stuff. So they're expanding that metaverse quite drastically. But UPEX is like their primary currency. And so you can buy a bunch of things with UPEX and you can sell things for UPEX or USD. Our goal is to have UPEX World primarily use UPEX for all premium transactions. So in the case, and actually, I don't know. I know that you're primarily a like voice only, but I do have a slide to help show the kind of the revenue share, how it breaks down.
Mm-hmm. You want to just talk about it for the sake of listeners?
Yeah. So I'll definitely talk through it. I didn't know if you wanted to see it. So we'll have form factors, which is like your t-shirt, your hat, your painting, whatever. And then you add the art. So let's just say it costs 100 UPEX. We use round numbers to add a piece of art to a t-shirt. And we'll say the t-shirt costs 25 UPEX. So the idea is that these are small amounts. Like we're not charging tens of dollars. We're charging, you know, a dollar or less. In fact, that's 10 cents for that.
Right.
But then the idea is whoever owns that art would get 89 UPEX for it. The artist would get 6 UPEX every time it sells. Now, the easiest way would be to just go, hey, you can have UPEX. But we realize that that isn't the best motivator for people because it's like a fake. It's not a fake. It's a real in-game currency.
It's an in-game asset. In-game.
Yeah, like that you could then go and buy things. But for UPEX World to really grow to where it needs to be, we recognize that that needs to be converted to USD. So I am in talks with the Upland team of what does that look like? How can we as a partner platform to Upland maybe convert the revenue we're generating as UPEX into USD? And then we would be able to then pay out the artist and the owners in USD if they would prefer. Again, there'll be a conversion rate. So it'll likely be something that when we do it, it'll be an option like, hey, do you want 1,000 UPEX or in the USD equivalent, we can get you, you know, 60 cents, whatever. I don't know what the conversion rate is. So I don't want to make any promises on what that rate is, but
I'm just imagining they're probably averting some of all like the securities, legal stuff and whatnot by it just being an in-game token. And if ultimately, if you want to make money from it, you would just perhaps buy assets in the game. And then it's up to you if you sell them for USD and kind of gets rid of the whole securities issue in a sense. I don't know if it really totally does, but
it does. For them, it really does. That's definitely one of their biggest things. And trust me, if you're on the community at all, people are like, why? I want to be able to sell my UPEX on the market, blah, blah, blah. And they're like pounding the door. And Upland's like, no, like, there's two, and you know what?
That's a real rat's nest. Yeah.
when the crypto crash happened and the entire economy of Sandbox, Decentraland, all of these other metaverses that had their token on open markets crashed.
Yeah.
Like Upland obviously took a dip because the entire economy, but nowhere near the rest of the market because it was isolated. It didn't have its token being exchanged, which is one of the many reasons I'm a big fan of what Upland is doing.
I wanted to ask you about like, where do you imagine, you talked a little bit about it. You talked about being on hats or shirts, you know, like when I think about art in the real world, I mean, pretty much anywhere you go, that's beautified in one way or another. You could argue that's art. So can you talk to me about where do you see this art existing in Upland? Where are you going to see it?
Yeah. So, I mean, outside of like wearables, I would say, again, we mentioned that there's cars. So we have like skins for different race cars, things like that. I think that'll be a form factor. So seeing it on vehicles, maybe there's actually like vans and stuff. So like on the side of a van, Decorating houses, so both exterior,
so like murals type idea.
Oh yeah, there, and there's some pieces that
street art,
like street art style, where you're able to like just like mat it on the side of your building, or create even just like framed art for your house, right? Because like you said,
okay,
I think like that will be, and I probably focus a lot on in-game items because as a gamer, like that's where my mind goes. Sure. But the reality is, like, as people start to have these virtual homes, and we're seeing that in a lot of different places, like they want to display art and show off things. But there's a big difference between a gamer mentality and like the crypto Web3 current mentality. And like, as a gamer, I can tell you, I don't care about true ownership in that sense. Like, I want the cool thing. I don't care. I don't want to pay $100. I'll pay $100 for it, but I don't want to. I'd rather pay $5 for the super cool thing. And then I just want it. So as opposed to paying $500 and like owning it to be able to sell it later, because I'm never going to do that. I just want the cool thing. So I think by having this in between, you now have a way to give the gamers and the mass market where the money is. Right, where the new money, that's the big thing that I'm currently seeing, is like we're in this swirl now where we're not getting a lot of
closed circuit. Yeah,
closed circuit's a great way to describe it. And so we have to get that mass market, the billions of dollars that are being spent in the gaming industry, we have to show them a better way and say, hey, not only are we going to create a really fun game and a platform for you, but now instead of buying in-game items that just go to feed these giant corporations that everybody pretty much universally hates, gamers, non-gamers, no one likes EA games. I'm sorry, we just don't. There's no
reason. I like the games.
You know, and like, and this one's sponsored by EA Games. Awkward.
Oh, NHL by EA. It's been one of my favorite games for years. I'm Canadian, so you know I got to play hockey.
Okay. Well, we'll forgive that. And so being able to then give them an alternative that says, hey, look at this. When you buy these items, like, and we want complete transparency. So all of our in-app purchases will link back to the NFT so you can see who you're actually funding, right? And we work with charities. We work with other, charitable organizations to say, hey, we're going to give you cuts of this passive revenue. And I think, to me, that's Web3, right? That's the final piece. The decentralization of revenue streams is to me the final piece to having a true like Web3 community.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard about, I mean, a little bit of related topic, you hear about this whole thing with Top Shots and Dapper Labs and how they're saying, hey, because that was a closed system there, that you were forcing people to purchase the Top Shots on that blockchain, therefore you're arguably a security because it depends upon the success of the Dapper Labs central entity, the value is dependent upon their performance. I don't know. Did you hear about that?
I did. I'm a big fan of Dapper Labs in general. I made really good money, unlike probably some people on Top Shots, because I sold at the peak.
You sold at the right time?
Oh yeah. I saw it coming. Cause I bought like in the August before it came, like I was in the early days. So I got super lucky, and I hate sports in general.
Yeah, I was gonna say, also he doesn't like sports, so he had no emotional connection letting him go.
Exactly.
That's which, you know what, I never really thought about that. I didn't, because I wasn't like our buddy Too Stupid, who I do the podcast with. He gets emotionally like, and he went even deeper in on it when I'm like, dude, you should be selling this, because like we're getting like 100x return. Like, I don't care who these people are. Sell. And then, yeah, luckily, like I look back at my sales and they're almost all the top of what they were. And I was like, holy crap. I literally sold
nicely done.
To be fair, over the last 3 years, I have also had some terrible experiences and losses where I did not play it as well. But that particular case, I didn't hear about the securities thing, but overall Dapper Labs and what they were doing, I like their innovation in the space. But yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
It's
going
to be interesting, I think, just the legal,
I have to look into
the fact that they're going so aggressive in it in the States, just with, you know,
don't know. It seems like, you know, and rather than setting out a good, you know, like framework, they're just going, let's just start, you know, charging people with security violations. It's like, well, maybe put out some laws that are more clearly defined so people know what the rules are. It's like playing a game where they don't give you the rules and then just giving you penalties for arbitrary things as you play. Do you know what I mean? That's what it feels like.
Yeah. And I would say the vast majority aren't bad actors in the space, right. But the problem is there are definitely bad. I mean,
yeah,
that's why everything's had to get renamed. That's why you can't say the letters NFT in an art community or a gaming community without getting huge backlash. Just like, get out of here with that. Like, we don't want your rug pulling pyramid scheme scams. Like, holy cow. Like,
I consider there have been scams. Yeah.
I consider pyramid scheme an offensive term. please refrain from using the term pyramid scheme.
So talk about the pyramid. No, I'm just kidding.
But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we have a long way to go to kind of clear up some of those. And that's why, like, obscuring that layer. Like, again, we don't, we're launching on Steam, knock on wood, this month.
Oh, really?
Our game. Okay. And it won't have the in-app purchases and everything fully built out in the alpha launch, but the game and the premise and being able to walk around and try some of the other experiences we have will be there. And
you're talking UpX World specifically or Upland?
UpX World. UpX
yeah.
World. Yeah. So again, it's a full gaming platform. So it's not,
right.
We have car racing. We have some like neighborhood, which takes from Upland, right? So we partner with other projects. So like Upland, which is properties, we actually make those the neighborhoods then inside of a Unity environment, and all the buildings and everything that you have, we bring them into the 3D space, let you walk around with your avatar, blow up buildings, hunt down block explorers, which are these little characters, like all kinds of gamification and stuff that we're doing there. But the premise is that you get people in with a fun game that's available on Steam, which, by the way, you can't put a blockchain game on Steam.
Right.
They won't let you. The beauty of what we're doing is we're not a blockchain game. Mm-hmm. We leverage NFTs behind the scenes to distribute our revenue. But UpX World itself isn't selling NFTs. You can't win NFTs. You can't buy NFTs in our game. If you want to buy NFTs, you have to go to 1111 through the Hive, or you have to go to Upland. You have to go to wherever those NFTs are being sold at layer one. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to get mass market gamers. We're going to be ramping up our Twitch streaming. We'll stream the games. We'll get people playing the game, and then they'll be buying the stuff. And then hopefully there'll be a conversion of like, wait a second. You can own this art, and the people that own this art get revenue. Well, wait, I have a YouTube following. I have a Twitch following. I play Fortnite. And when I wear a Fortnite skin, everybody buys it. Okay. Hold
right,
on.
Right.
What if as a top gaming streamer, I go buy some of this art. I then own the art. I then make these cool items, stream it for my listeners, who will then buy it, and I now generate revenue as opposed to me generating revenue for Fortnite. Like, you can now control your kind of your own marketing and revenue departments without having to create your own game, without having to really worry about creating in-game items. So as an artist, you can either create and let others, or as a player and gamer, you can go buy these layer one assets and then leverage them to earn passive revenue. So to me, like, that's why once it starts getting going, I think it'll be a groundswell opportunity. And hopefully then we'll start changing that conversation around what NFTs mean to gaming, what NFTs mean to art.
Now back to Dr. Nobi, I did notice on your application form as an artist, that you specifically stated on there, no AI art. I want to hear your take on this, please.
Okay, everybody strap in. So as an artist, especially as a physical artist, you know, makeup effects artist, everything I do I mean, did. I don't really do it much anymore, but, you know, sculpture, painting, prosthetics, application, stuff like that, you know, those skills translate to the digital world. If you are using a tablet or, you know, however you're doing it, except for AI. So because AI, and the argument is, well, AI is just another tool. And that's true, but it's a tool like we've never seen before. AI is a tool that does its own work. So the way I see it, AI is like, and the counter argument to that is like, well, prompting is a skill. And it's like, yeah, sure, that's a skill, but it's not a skill that makes you an artist. Sorry, it's just not. So you can be an artist in the sense that a producer is an artist, or maybe even closer to the way that a director is an artist, but not the way that a painter is an artist. It's just not the same. So if you are moving your hands and thinking about, like, if you're making your brain move your hands in a way that produces the outcome that we see, that's the kind of art that I'm talking about. AI is amazing. It's like TML and I spend hours talking about AI and how incredible it is and how it's going to completely obliterate sections of the economy. I'm not opposed to AI. It's just not for this. You can use it as like a base layer, you know, and then you can transform it. So kind of in the same way, you know, if you're familiar with art law and copyright law and stuff like that, you can use AI in the same way that you could use copyrighted material or stock images or whatever. You know, you can use that stuff, but it can't be the core of your work. It can't be really the majority of what we see as the final product.
So you could argue it could be the muse that inspires you to create the art, but it should not be the basis for the art itself.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if you're sitting there prompting on an AI art generator, I see that really more akin to commissioning an artist to do a piece of work, and then you're giving them notes and then they're readjusting it. You know?
And if your instructions are really specific, they may come up with something really close to what you have in your mind's eye.
Yes, but the odds that anyone or anything other than you, I mean, even the odds that you're going to produce exactly what's in your mind are basically nothing.
It's true.
But then take that outside of yourself and it becomes even more nothing.
Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed playing around with AI to create art that I felt I tried to make it resemble my own style, which is fun to play around with the wording in such a way as to get something that looks like it's created by me. But I agree, I don't feel like it's created by me in the same way.
Yeah,
it's more like manipulating a system to come up with something that mimics me.
Right. I mean, you can be an amazing race car driver. You know, you can set the world record for land speed in a car, but that doesn't make you a good runner, you know.
See, at the same time, though, I mean, it's a form of expression. There's a wordsmith element to it where you're, you know, taking something from your thoughts and transferring it to a medium that is then presenting something from your creative expression.
Right.
I don't know. TML, I see you there kind of, I don't know what you think. I feel like you might disagree a little bit.
I mean, I appreciate the perspective that Dr. Nobi has. And obviously, as the owner, proprietor, curator of 1111, he is absolutely free to do and set whatever guidelines he wants. I think it is art, honestly. Like, not all of it. And again, like, to me, it's very much
that's
like,
where it gets tricky, right?
Well, and because again, like, some people would look at, like, if you just painted an entire canvas black and then splash some, like, okay, anybody could do that,
but
is that really art? Like, at that point, like, but it, and to me, like, that would be like going on an AI generator, like, make me a cool picture of an alien sunset, man. Like, okay, cool. It probably looks awesome. And I'm sure, but like, there is, like, I've been listening to some of these Twitter spaces of these AI artists, and honest to God, the detail and like the amount that they go through in these batching processes and like trying to curate specific
looks. It's curation is a huge part of it.
Like, they're putting in a tremendous amount of effort, plus the creativity it takes. Like, I don't know, like a director is taking somebody, a director would be like me telling Dr. Nobi, like, here's what I want. And then Dr. Nobi telling an AI, like, but like, to me, like, you're a screenwriter. Like, I, maybe you're a written word, but to me, that's art. Like, the way that they have to like think about the English language and synonyms and like other things to pull in inspiration and then trying out the system, to me, is very impressive. Granted, most of them are just like typing in like three or four words, they get something cool. But like, if you really want the high end stuff that looks like not with like the hands all mangled and like
I like that. I like making mangled hands. I find that's interesting.
Like, yeah. Like the stuff we saw 12 months ago with it from where we are now, like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think if you could show your process through the AI and it wasn't just like, hey, I type these things in, to me, I know that there'll be other projects in UpX world that will definitely be supporting AI art, because I think it would be a miss not to, because to me, it's really cool, but it is different, right? It doesn't have the same soul. I will say that, like, it, to me, there is this element of somebody putting their soul and heart into a piece that they made by hand. Like,
yeah, there is something lacking there.
There is, like, and you can almost tell, you can look at a piece and go, this looks super cool, but it doesn't have soul. It's hard to explain, but you can, and it's not always easy, but I don't know. I can tell a lot of times, like, this is AI, or like, I could tell, like, somebody put some real heart into this creation.
Well, when you get an unknown artist who's suddenly making photorealistic portraiture, right? Yeah. Of women, you know, usually it's beautiful women with some kind of crazy robotic effects or something, right? And you know, it's like, that's AI, you know what I mean? And that's where it does feel like, okay, I don't know if, how artistic that really is. I mean, you could argue it's art. I don't know if it's good art. Maybe that's more of what it is, you know, is it good art? Right. Like, okay, sure, it's art, but is it good? You know?
Yeah. And speaking as an old school physical makeup effects artist, you know, this is kind of like, to me, this feels like the next CG. This is like, you know, like when CG came in. I mean, I know people in the makeup effects industry who were basically just wiped out when CG came in. You know, and obviously they're going to have their feelings about it because it's very personal to them. But I don't want to sound like I'm entirely anti AI, in the same way that I'm not anti CG, you know, it's just the evolution of things. It's just the way it's going to go. But like we were talking about, there's that kind of, there's definitely a high potential for that soulless feeling. Like when CG started, it was extremely obvious and very bad 100% of the time. And then it became like, okay, it's not that bad, but it still doesn't feel
it
right.
It still had a certain coolness to it even. So like, yeah, I don't know. For some reason, right out on top of my mind, I think of I Want My MTV, Dire Straits music video. That was one of the first like CG like music videos I remember seeing and being like, holy shit, this is cool. But if you look at it now, it's horrible. Like,
well, I mean, actually, so that's not even what I mean.
But it's cool.
Yes. Yeah. But when I say CG, I mean, that's kind of on another level where it's like, yes, this is completely what we're doing. It's all CG and we're not making any pretense about it. Like, cool. Yeah. That's that thing that I see that completely separate as like from like trying to create an effect digitally as opposed to physically, when it's like, you know, another thing about it is that with physical effects, and I mean, now we're kind of beyond this point because CG is just so good now. It's like,
yeah, you're almost talking about CG that's taking the place of, you know, physical alterations to create a special effect.
Right. So as opposed to doing it physically, where obviously that's the less efficient way and more expensive and more time consuming and takes more people and it's just worse overall. But because you're working within those limitations, you it forces you to be more creative. It forces it forces you to work with the director and say, you have to frame it like this. You have to light it like this. You have to shoot it like this. This is the box we're working in. And like, for example, with Jaws, the only reason you never see the shark hardly is because it didn't work. And they built this whole thing and then it was like all shaky and weird and looked terrible. And so they had to edit around it and it was a disaster. But now it's like one of the most classic films there ever
it's
was.
Like it's like the Space Armada scene in Star Wars with the tennis shoe. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with that. Or are you?
I'm not. No, not that scene.
Well, there's... I believe it was Return of the Jedi. I'm not sure, though. It could have been Empire Strikes Back. And there's a famous Space Armada scene. You can look it up on YouTube. Okay. And all these things were, these models of these spaceships were done by hand. And it was, of course, very painstaking process.
Right.
And at one point in time, one of the people modeling all of these ships was so frustrated with what was going on, they literally took their tennis shoe and put it into the scene. And there's a clip that you can see, a single shot of a tennis shoe flying across the screen in this Space Armada. It goes by so quickly that you can't see it unless it's a freeze frame.
I love
look
that.
It up. It's, you know, it's on YouTube somewhere.
But yeah, that's a perfect example. It works. Do it.
Yeah. So there's something special about that. I hear you. I don't know. I'm kind of torn about it. I like playing with it. I have made AI art. Usually I do something to it. I'll change it in one way or another, or, you know, I'll manipulate it, or, you know, sometimes I've just used it as like a source, like, you know, you know to draw something where you look at it and then you make something based from it, you know, that kind of thing. But it's a tricky subject. I don't know. I mean, maybe 10 years from now it won't even be an issue. I don't know if it'll be so ubiquitous that, you know, we won't even question it anymore, just like CG is.
Right. You know. Yeah, I see it like, you know, being an artist, I feel like I am that person from 10 years from now. I'm already that guy because I'm the makeup effects artist in a CG world. So it's like, you know, all these artists are being a person who is good at physical art or you know, drawing on a tablet even. Is probably going to become more and more rare because the incentive will become less and less other than just doing it because you like to do it.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like there's the satisfaction of doing it for yourself, right? That I don't know. I think that still carries through to the viewer.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And to collectors and, you know, people who care about that stuff.
Yeah. So very interesting. What do you want to wrap up with here? What's going on in, you talked about UpX World being on Steam. TML, what's going on with 1111 in the next little while here? You've got, what epoch are you on? I think it was fifth from what I saw.
We're wrapping up Epic 4. Yeah. So depending on when this releases, Epic 4 will be ending March 11th. So if this comes out before then you can go to 1111nft.gallery and go to art and go to Epic 4, and then you'll see all the pieces and click on those. That'll take you to NFT Hive where you can place your bids. And then I already have all the art for Epic 5, and that will be coming up immediately thereafter.
Okay. And for this, an artist eventually is going to need a wax wallet at some point, if I'm understanding correctly.
Before, with your application. Yeah. So if you, I mean, it's really easy to do.
Wax is like the easiest wallet. You can just use a cloud wallet. You just use your Gmail. Super easy.
Yeah. It's as easy as making an Instagram account, maybe easier.
Yeah. I'd say easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to select what interests you have.
Sign your soul over to Mark Zuckerberg or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. I just came here to stalk my ex. Like, get off my case.
No, I find Wax, they do a lot of things right when it comes to ease of use, you know, and there is actually a community there that's really into art that gets overlooked sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Wax seems to be the right place for it just because, like you said, ease of use and then integration. And yeah, also the art community there. I know that Ethereum is like the still kind of the reigning king of sure. art on the blockchain, but and Wax is like this little guy, but it's again, I kind of see it as like, you know, it's like Wax is going to the record shop where Ethereum is Apple Music.
Yeah, no, I get you totally. Right on. Well, hey, thank you very much for spending this time with me. And yeah, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk to me about what's going on with you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us. This was awesome.
Awesome. Right on. Take care, guys.
Thanks.
Hey, if you enjoyed this episode of NFP with D. Klein, please like and subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. Thanks again for listening to the Non-Fungible Podcast. See you again soon.